Today at Reader's Corner, Nils Barrett, speaking about his late father's memoir, Inside the President's Team, Family, Service, and the Gerald Ford Presidency by Bob Barrett. I'm Bob Custer. Welcome to Reader's Corner. Except for his wife, Betty, no one was closer to Gerald Ford during his presidency than Bob Barrett. As Ford's military attaché, Bob carried the nuclear football, the American nuclear codes, and could not let President Ford out of his sight. This led to a deep friendship with the first family and gave Bob an unparalleled view of Ford's historic and most unusual presidency. In his memoir, Inside the President's Team, Bob Barrett takes readers into the White House and the Ford home to show the administration and the couple as few others could see them. Bob Barrett died in 2022 at 83. His son, Nils Barrett, joins us today to speak about his late father's memoir. Nils, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, as I was telling you before we went on the air, this book is indeed a tonic for our times. It's a monumental contrast to today's situation we have going on in Washington. Your dad described President Ford as the most decent, honest man to serve as president in his lifetime. We all, I guess, view Gerald Ford as the accidental president. And I guess we should remind our readers he was not Nixon's 1972 vice presidential pick, but he was appointed by Nixon after his VP, then Spiro Agnew, who was Nixon's VP, was indicted. And he resigned in 1973. Ford then served as vice president until Nixon resigns. Let's talk about your dad for a moment. How does he get this job as military attaché? This isn't something he planned, that's for sure. And then there had to be a change of plans once Nixon resigned. Share that with us.
Well, you know, it's a great story, and I think it's depicted really well in the book. I love reading that part to start, is that it was very unexpected. I mean, we were living, you know, on various army bases. He was, you know, I grew up a military brat, if you will, and, you know, traveling to his various posts, my dad's various posts, that is. And, you know, and we were at the time in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and he received a call. And, you know, like I said, I love the way he depicts it in the book. It was completely unexpected. And then the process I thought was very interesting, the way it was portrayed and the way it went down between the uncertainty of everything, not knowing, you know, how or what to deal with the call or with the travel to meet and interview, if you will, such as it was. And then ultimately with the transition and change with Nixon resigning. So, I mean, there was so much going on and so much uncertainty in general, you know, with the presidency, never mind his little slice of time, you know, being introduced to it all. So it's really remarkable and wildly unexpected, but, you know, opportunity knocks and he was, he was there and happy and ready to serve.
Well, I loved your dad quoting President Ford at the time. I'm sorry for the confusion, Major Barrett. I hope you'll stay with us. That one sentence there changed your dad's life and career.
And he thinks about, you know, he would mention that to me all the time as a defining moment. So
yeah,
it meant a lot, and it kind of it you know, shows and describes the kind of person that President Ford was and always was with regards to, you know, my dad's service for him. And then, as time went on as well.
Yeah. So let's talk about what a military attaché really does. I mentioned the nuclear football. You might want to tell us what's inside that suitcase or briefcase. But in addition to that, your dad did a lot more than just carry around the nuclear football.
Yeah, there was a lot of logistical advanced work and, preparations for, domestic and international travel, meetings and, and preparation for any number of events and introductions and just, you know, a wide variety of things, a lot of advanced work. I mean, some of the trips that were mentioned in the book, I thought in particular going to Russia to the Vladivostok summit with Brezhnev kind of reflected how much, you know, goes into a presidential presidential travel. And a lot of it was that was a big portion of what he did as, you know, military aide to the president.
Yeah. So getting back to Gerald Ford, give us a thumbnail sketch of Ford in his early days, his college days, volunteering for the Navy. I think he walked away with 10 battle stars from World War II. No burn spurs for sure for Gerald Ford. He volunteered. But I thought his college days were really interesting and definitely stand out among his peers.
Yeah, you know, I'm no historian per se on President Ford, but I will say that the his years of playing football at Michigan was really, you know, lasted with him for the rest of his life. I mean, I remember times when we would be visiting with my dad, and we'd go to the Ford house in Vail, Colorado during a winter break or something. And the Rose Bowl game would be on New Year's Day. And, you know, or if any other time the Michigan Wolverines were playing football, that was the order of the day. And so I remember him, you know, being very glad and very sad, depending on how the result was.
Right. And he wasn't just any football player. Gerald Ford was All American. He was captain of the team. Absolutely. I mean, this is a guy who was at the top of his game.
He was a very athlete. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, I know, you know, playing golf and tennis and swimming, he was very athletic.
Yeah. And there's one particular story that I've been passing on to friends that is the measure of the man, as I would say, especially in his years. I mean, it had to be, what, the 1930s, I guess, late 30s or something, when this all would have happened, when he was captain of the Michigan football team. There was one African-American on the team, and they were going to play Georgia. And I think it was the coach of Georgia or somebody called and said, don't bring the black man. And it was Gerald Ford who stood up and said, I'm not going if we don't bring Willie Woods. And Willie Woods ended up playing against Georgia.
That's a great story. I mean, I'm not familiar with that story, but that's really great to hear. It did definitely, you know, typifies the type of, you know, character that President Ford always had.
Yeah, right. So the most famous quote, I think, is one that I wish I could hear today. My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over. Our Constitution works. Our great republic is a government of laws and not of men. Here the people rule. And with that, Gerald Ford becomes president, and he chooses Henry Kissinger as his Secretary of State. Any thoughts on that relationship or what you might even remember about Henry Kissinger?
Sure. I mean, he was always, you know, described to me, you know, by my dad as the smartest guy in the room. Remarkable, the statesman that he was, but also how long he served, you know, the country, you know, even, you know, prior to that and since then, you know, until he passed away. I mean, it was his longevity and his ability to, you know, maintain, you know, opinions and perspectives for, you know, decades was really remarkable. And I think he served, you know, President Ford very well during those years, for sure.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think your dad says that it was Henry Kissinger who made the strongest argument for Gerald Ford running on his own in 1976. That obviously was a big family decision, and it was one that was not made lightly. So Ford decides to run as president in 76, and he has to choose a VP nominee. What's he looking for? And Nelson Rockefeller gets the nod.
From what I understand, it was a, not controversial, but there was a lot of indecision about who would bring the most to the ticket. And I can't imagine that made or broke the outcome. Yeah. I mean, I imagine that's probably the case with most decisions like that. I mean, the amount of pros and cons that are weighed and ultimately how it ends up affecting the outcome is anyone's guess, really. I don't know if it had been somebody else. I'm not sure.
Well, we'll get to Rockefeller again, because there's another moment in Ford's career when he has to make a decision involving Rockefeller. But before we get there, you're listening to Reader's Corner. My guest today is Nils Barrett, speaking about his late father's memoir, Inside the President's Team, Family, Service, and the Gerald Ford Presidency by Bob Barrett. I just want to point out how incredibly courageous some of Ford's decisions were and how far-sighted they were. And the one that first comes to mind is when he goes to speak to the veterans of foreign wars, and he decides to tell them that he's going to pardon the Vietnam War resistors.
I know. I think that's a great story. I mean,
oh my gosh.
And I didn't know that until I read the book. I mean, I hadn't known that story. I mean, grand scheme of things, I mean, from a layman's perspective, I mean, it's a pretty obscure reference, but it kind of says a lot about character that President Ford had, but also, in an effort to, heal the country. I mean, I think that is an ongoing recurring theme. And, other books have been written, A Time to Heal kind of really represents the era and the effort that President Ford put forth. I mean, it's remarkable. That definitely represented that goal. That seems to be a recurring theme of healing.
Yeah, right.
I think that was a great story.
And your dad put it so well. He said you could hear a pin drop. I mean, the last thing these veterans expected to hear was to pardon these folks that were out there protesting against war. And of course, they always considered that protesting against veterans as well.
Yeah.
I might throw in here, Nils, that this book is really well written. I mean, your dad did an excellent job of putting together this book in such a way that it's the finest prose. The sense of humor the book shows, both from your dad and from Gerald Ford, and the fun they had together is just so refreshing in these days when people don't smile in Washington anymore. Not the way they were smiling and laughing in the Ford presidency.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my dad was always a great writer, always would try to convey his thoughts or keep a daily journal of events, appointments, thoughts, and what have you. And I think it's really well, depicted with his writing. I mean, I must say that it was edited down. I mean, there was more personal stuff in there once upon a time. I think he was, really putting it all on the paper. And I really think they did an excellent job of editing it down to the form that it is and focusing on the points that are made. I think it's, I agree. It was well written and also well edited.
I'm just glad they stopped when they did, because I just hung on to every sentence as this story unfolds. And that takes me to another pardon, this one a heck of a lot more dangerous than the first one, because this is the case where President Ford decides to pardon Richard Nixon, who has resigned from office. At the time, only 38% of Americans said Ford should pardon Nixon, while 53% said he should not. And again, what I found so fascinating about your father's take on this event is not what happened at the time, but what happened years later when Ford is at the Kennedy Museum and Senator Ted Kennedy is speaking to the crowd about Gerald Ford.
Right. And recognizes it was the right thing to do for the country to move forward. I mean, I think that, and that's really ultimately, I think that's the legacy, thankfully, of President Ford, is being in a position to provide that stability and healing for the country at a time when it was pretty fraught with uncertainty about how things would turn out. In the grand scheme of things, it was proven to be a wise decision.
So you mentioned earlier the trip to Vladivostok when there were a couple of problems there, that an oil leak in a swimming pool. Do you remember the details of those two issues as far as the Russians and Brezhnev are concerned?
Well, it wasn't the most luxurious or modern of settings or accommodations or facilities. And so, I mean, I never knew where Vladivostok was. I had to look at a map years ago, and, you know, I'm sure everybody did at the time. But being on the eastern peninsula there of Russia was an interesting locale. And so, yeah, I don't think they had the resources, and they didn't have the luxurious facilities that you would expect for a summit of, you know, two superpowers like that. Certainly today it would be some, you know, plush, posh resort or something, you know, but it was functional. They ended up bringing in teams of people to get it squared away, and it went off in the grand scheme of things again with a pretty positive result. Clearly, I think there was a understanding that they had to come to some agreements, and it was less of a fraught time, but it just seemed to be compromises were easier to come by back in the day, perhaps.
And, you know, the funny thing about that trip is that the Russians found out that Ford liked to swim. So they had this grungy old swimming pool that they tried to fix up. But I guess the CIA said, we're not putting him in that. And then there was a helicopter, and I think it was your dad or somebody with your dad that noticed there was an oil leak. And of course, you know, your dad would know about those things from his own experience in the services. And again, you know, they're thinking, I don't think we want to put him on one of those Russian helicopters. So I think they ended up taking the train.
I like the exchange of the fur coats and the hats, and, you know, they were all decked out. And
I'm glad you mentioned that, because your dad had this incredible fur coat that I think one of his buddies gave him, and he's leaving, and he and Brezhnev got along great, and they hug, and he goes halfway up the steps, and he looks back at Brezhnev, walks back down the steps, takes the fur coat off, and gives it to Brezhnev, the Soviet premier. And it was like a personal touch that only a president as good as Gerald Ford could figure out.
Yeah, there's a great picture in the book of President Ford, you know, wearing that coat, I believe, with one of the traditional fur caps too. And this is like Eastern Russia, Lower Siberia, call it what you will. It looked pretty cold there. And I think my dad was walking beside him without a trench coat or overcoat on or anything. It just, it was a good picture.
So it's 1976. And as Gerald Ford is getting ready to run, he decides to make a switch, and he dumps Rockefeller and puts George H.W. Bush in as VP nominee, who of course would later become president. Gerald Ford, I should say, did not himself think too highly of that decision in retrospect, did he?
Honestly, I mean, I don't have a good recollection of those events or facts. So I don't recall that. I'm sorry.
As it turns out, buried deeply in this book, Ford later in life says it was the wrong decision, that he should never have dumped Rockefeller. I wonder if we could just switch here and talk a bit about Betty Ford. What a special person she was. And she made her own history, so to speak, when she went on the 60 Minutes interview and ended up applauding Roe versus Wade when asked about it. And she added some other thoughts that were somewhat controversial in the Times. I wonder if you have any thoughts on the role she plays in Gerald Ford's life, and especially the intervention. That certainly was the low point of Betty's life, but boy, she recovered and became a real role model.
Yeah, she was no shrinking violet by any means. I mean, like you said, she would speak her mind, and I mean, I remember, you know, the times, you know, meeting her and seeing her, you know, when I was with my dad. You know, they were the nicest couple that you could you know, imagine. I mean, it was terrific being around them. I mean, it was very comfortable and welcoming. It's amazing everything that she had to go through with breast cancer and then the alcoholism, and ultimately the work that my dad did together with her and others to start the Betty Ford Clinic in Palm Springs was one of the proudest achievements of his life, and I'm sure it would be of hers as well. There was a lot to address. There were family issues, and all this happening in such a very high profile, very high profile circumstances. I don't know how anybody would handle that today. I mean, given the culture and the media that exists today, I don't know how anybody could necessarily survive really be as strong as she was through it all. It was really remarkable.
I really got a kick out of one of your dad's inside stories that he tells about this moment after she goes on 60 Minutes and basically takes a pro-choice approach to the issue of abortion, which of course at the time most Republicans weren't there. And she comes home and Ford's reading the paper, and she comes into the room, and I guess your dad was with him at the time, or he wouldn't have been able to make this very specific recollection. And she says, I hope that interview doesn't in any way affect you politically, Gerald, or whatever she called him, honey, whatever. And his response, without even putting down the paper, was, "No, honey, not only if I want to get reelected." I thought that was just a priceless line. And that was it. I mean, it's not like he put the paper down to give her a lecture. It's not like he did anything else. He went right on reading his newspaper, one of five he read every morning. It's just a classic line.
Yeah, they couldn't have been more respectful of each other.
Today, I'm speaking with Nils Barrett, who's joined us to talk about his late father's memoir, Inside the President's Team, Family Service and the Gerald Ford Presidency. The book offers an up-close view of the Ford presidency by Bob Barrett, one of his closest and most trusted advisors. The intervention, I mentioned the word intervention earlier. I've been involved in one intervention in my life, asked to speak on behalf speak about a friend who was struggling with alcoholism at the time. And I know what those are like. They're the toughest things in the world. And Ford really, really lived up to his reputation as a good husband and father in that encounter.
Yeah, I can't top that would be for anybody, under those circumstances. And it happens all the time to many people, and the support that people are able to provide and receive and hopefully be open to, it's all very life-changing. And it just goes to show you that it's the same for the most powerful politician and leader in the world, as it is for any other individuals that are having to deal with it. And, I think President Ford shows how human he is, especially at that time, for sure. Yeah.
What's so impressive about this moment in the Ford's family is that here's an intervention that is basically telling Betty she has to quit pills, she has to quit drinking, and she does, and she rehabilitates herself. Like you say, she becomes a leader in the movement, establishing the center in Palm Springs. But Ford's reaction was so interesting. Your dad writes, well, at one point, he just gave up drinking. He turned his glass upside down and he said, if I asked her to give up drinking, what's that say about me if I'm still drinking right alongside of her?
About the smoking.
Yes, that's right.
I think it was his daughter, maybe, that
Susan.
Was smoking and wanting her to stop, but not being able to feeling like it would be hypocritical for him to continue to smoke his pipe. So he had them, removed and quit cold turkey as well. I mean, and I remember him with the pipes. I mean, the pipes were eventually still present, but I think hopefully provided the moral support and solidarity in getting her to quit. But, the pipes at the time were very much a part of his persona and look, and just, you kind of remember him with a pipe. I always like those images.
Well, I think your dad said that you can imagine how many pipes a president gets over the years as everybody's trying to figure out some way to give him a special present. So apparently he had a load of them all had to put aside. It's 1976. It's Ford versus Jimmy Carter, a race Carter would win. But according to your father, close enough that some of Ford's advisors suggested a recount in certain states that were so close.
Going back again to the idea and the with Ford, he wanted to heal the country. He didn't want to have it be disruptive. He wanted the peaceful transfer of power. He wanted to be undisputed and represented the best way possible to move forward. And I think that he recognized that prolonging it, protracting it out to recounts and disputed outcomes was not going to serve anybody well. And he I don't think he would have wanted to have won that way. I don't think he would have wanted to put everyone through it, given the circumstances. And I think that just, again, represents, you know, the kind of person and character that he had and was. And, you know, and the rest is history. It was never going to be an option.
You know, Nils, I was reading your dad's words about the duties of a military attaché. I'm 3/4 of the way through the book before I finished it. And all of a sudden it occurs to me, given the travel alone that your dad's talking about, not to mention the long days in the White House or wherever Gerald Ford was. And I thought, could there be a job less conducive to family life than the job Bob Barrett held in those years? Your thoughts on that? I mean, you're in a sense, the guy who would see that close up and personal.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I must say, my mother was great. She is great. God bless her. And I think that it wasn't easy for them. It really wasn't easy for my mom. I mean, I enjoyed all the trappings of being, you know, like I said, an Army brat, being on the bases. My sister and I, you know, had a fantastic childhood, and, you know, we didn't really realize the amount of time away. It was always great when my dad came back and when he was there, and when we were doing stuff together, you know, going to DC, going to Vail, Colorado or California. And so it was never, you know, I always felt in a weird way to be a very much of a beneficiary of it all, but not to say that there wasn't a lot of personal issues for my parents. And of course, my dad subsequently ended up having 4 more wives. So it couldn't, maybe it wasn't just the travel White House years.
Well, we're out of time, but I want to leave with a quote, and it's a quote of George H.W. Bush that was said at President Ford's funeral services. As Americans, we generally eschew notions of the indispensable man, and yet during those traumatic times, few, if any, of our public leaders could have stepped up into the breach and rekindled our national faith, as did President Gerald R. Ford. Nils, I hope there's another one like him soon. But in the meantime, I want to thank you for joining us today at Reader's Corner. Thanks for helping us with your dad's book, which, as I said, is a tonic for our times, something so sorely needed at this moment in our nation's history. Thanks for joining us today at Reader's Corner. It is your dad's book that I so much enjoyed, and I hope so many of our readers do as well. It's Inside the President's Team, Family Service and the Gerald Ford Presidency by Bob Barrett. Nils, thanks again for joining us today at Reader's Corner.
Very nice to be here. I appreciate all your kind words and support. It was very nice talking with you.
Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio News. The engineer for today's show is James Baker, with production by Joel Wayne. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.
what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.